Welcome to the Minerals and Royalties Podcast, the home of CEOs and investors in the minerals and royalties space.
Hey guys, this is Tim Powell from the Minerals and Royalties Authority. I recently sat down with Chase Daly, SVP and Director of Energy Management at Farmers National Company, who is a specialty asset management firm representing individuals, families, foundations, banks, and trusts for the day-to-day management of their farmland, ranches, oil and gas minerals, hunting leases, lakes, forestry, and much, much more. Let's jump into the episode and hear more of what Chase had to say.
Chase, good morning, happy new year, and welcome onto the podcast. Good to have you.
Morning, Tim. Thanks for having me.
I know we've been talking about doing this for a while, and I finally twisted your arm enough. I'm glad to have you on. Looking forward to a good conversation. So, I just want to say thank you to Farmers National for being a supporting sponsor of the podcast. Had some good growth over the last year, and it's in thanks to to you and our other sponsors. So, just I'd be remiss if I didn't mention that.
Well, and we're happy to do it, and I'm really appreciative of the work you're doing in this space. So, thank you.
You bet. So let's start out a little personal context. What is a boy growing up in Missouri doing in oil and gas minerals management? Let's start from the origin story. Do you have any exposure in your family to oil and gas? Where'd you go to school? What's your trade? You know, where right. you are you a geologist, an engineer, a land guy, an attorney? And then, walk through the evolution of career and what led you to Farmers National about a year and a half ago. Over to you. Right.
Yeah, no family history in oil and gas, no connection to oil and gas growing up. All I cared about growing up was the Kansas City Chiefs, really. And so went to University of Missouri for undergrad. So I'm originally from Lee Summit, Missouri, right outside of Kansas City. Went to Mizzou for undergrad, ended up going straight into law school at Washington and Lee in Lexington, Virginia. Had a great experience there. But still was kind of a lost soul throughout that time. Really didn't have clear direction. And when I was looking for jobs in law school, times were still good. So it was right before the 2008 crash. So law firms were still traveling around the country looking for talent. And so if you were in Virginia, oftentimes you just presumed that you were gonna go to DC and work at a law firm in DC. So funny story, this law firm headquartered in Tulsa had a DC office, and they were going to Charlottesville, Virginia to do a career day and do interviews. So, 20 people signed up from our law school. And then the day before the interview, they sent out a note saying, actually, they're only interviewing for their Tulsa office. So everyone cancels, including myself. And so later that day, I get a call from the career services, and they said, listen, according to our file, you're from Missouri. That's somewhat close to Oklahoma. Everyone's canceled, and this is a bad look for us. Can you please go to this interview? Begrudgingly, I said, all right, fine. I remember driving to Charlottesville. I was running 10 to 15 minutes late for this interview. But it's one of those.
Always a good thing to do on interviews, right?
Yeah, what a power move, right? So I walk in, and it's kind of divine providence. I walked in and I just felt like I was back home immediately. The people, the personalities, we just immediately clicked. And it was, I don't even remember the interview. We were just talking about when I'm going to go to Tulsa and work there over the summer. It felt like we were there in 2 minutes. And so ended up working at a law firm in Tulsa. I'd never been to Tulsa, but I ended up loving the law firm. They had a great summer program. I remember when I interviewed there over the summer, my luggage got lost. You just have these memories of, I remember doing the interview in not my suit and tie, right? And so it was just one of those, fateful things that worked out. But that's how I found my way to Tulsa. And I worked at a law firm called Paul Estell. And it just so happened that they had some of the best lawyers in oil and gas in the world, including a guy named James Hardwick and Mark Banner. So I immediately jumped in and was working with these kind of titans in the industry and soaked it all up as soon as I could. And then the benefit of working in a smaller market like Tulsa is, unlike, if I went to New York and I'm an associate attorney, I'm going to be doing doc review. I'm going to be reviewing files and making, memos. That wasn't the case for me. I went straight into the fire. I was arguing hearings. I was managing trials. And, you know, the benefit of that is you go to a rural county in Oklahoma for a hearing that you know you're going to lose. There's an 80-year-old judge behind the bench, and the opposing counsel is his nephew. It's like, you know, after you have enough of those experiences, there's just, you have no fear. And so it beat the fear out of me completely. And so I really enjoyed that, but I did not like billing. I like to zoom in and out from a detailed perspective. I'm not one of those lawyers who can, for 10 hours, get into the granular details. And I found billing to be like a second job for me. It just didn't fit with my personality. So I worked at Hall Estill for 3.5 years and then was recruited to come in-house with Sampson Resources. And that really kicked things off for me in the upstream space.
Welcome to An Ounce of Prevention. The team at Our Recent Associates has partnered with Tim Powell to bring you brief legal updates on issues that matter to mineral owners, non-ops, and operators. We hope you find this segment informative. As always, if you have any questions, feel free to reach out to me, Rachel Reese, at rreese@rreeselaw.com. Today's update is on Van Dyke versus the Navigator Group, which was ruled on by the Texas Supreme Court earlier this year. Van Dyke is just the latest in a line of what are called by the court double fraction cases. To clarify, the court did not use either Van Dyke or Navigator to describe the parties in this case. Instead, it used the white parties and the Mulkey parties. Here, the 1924 deed at issue contained a reservation to the grantor of 1/2 of 1/8 of the minerals. For 90 years after the deed at issue, all parties involved, without exception, treated this conveyance as if it had conveyed half of the minerals to the white parties and reserved half of the minerals to the Mulkey parties. As happens, things become messier once real money gets involved. In 2013, the white parties filed this lawsuit over $44 million of royalties derived from the wells drilled in 2012 by Endeavor. The Texas Supreme Court ultimately ruled in favor of the Mulkey parties, and here is their explanation. One of the tenets often relied on by courts when interpreting older deeds is that words must be given the meaning they had when the text was adopted. So despite the fact that 1/2 of 1/8 would clearly mean 1/16 today, the question was, what did the phrase mean back in 1924? According to the court, in 1924, 1/8 was commonly used to describe the entire mineral estate. Over 100 years ago, the phrase 1,000 rabbits actually meant 1,200 rabbits. Why? I have no idea. But the Texas Supreme Court did explain why it believes that in 1924, 1/8 meant the entire mineral estate. It used to be a common misconception that in entering into an oil and gas lease, the lessor only retained an 1/8 interest in the minerals, and therefore people commonly referred to entire mineral estates as 1/8. Additionally, because 1/8 had been the royalty for so long, people believed that it would always be that way and felt comfortable using it as a proxy for future royalties. A more simple and straightforward reason, also relied on by the court, is that if the Mulkeys had meant to reserve only 1/16, they could have said 1/16. It is simple math, and we should assume that people knew how to multiply in 1924. According to the court, history and common sense require that when a deed contains a double fraction, with the second fraction being 1/8, there arises a rebuttable presumption that the 1/8 refers to the entire mineral estate. The court really didn't need another reason to hold for the Mulkeys, but it went on to explain that in almost 100 years between the time the deed was signed and the suit was filed, all parties that had ever been involved with these minerals had treated the original conveyance as if it divided the minerals in half between the parties, in things like deeds, leases, division orders, and probate inventories. Therefore, the presumed grant doctrine applied, which would lead them to rule for the Mulkeys. In any states where mineral estates have been being bought and sold for quite some time, double fractions run rampant. In this case, the court was careful to state that its ruling is not establishing a hard and fast rule. There could be other evidence within a deed that rebuts the presumption that 1/8 means the entire mineral estate. But as any good lawyer knows, rebuttable presumptions are hard to overcome. To learn more about this and other cases that may affect you and your company, subscribe to our blog, An Ounce of Prevention, or follow us on LinkedIn for the latest updates.
The information and material in this advertisement is general information about our practice and firm and is for educational and informational purposes only. This information does not offer specific legal advice, and the use of this information does not create an attorney-client relationship with RRNA or any of its attorneys. The information in this advertisement should not be considered legal advice, and persons should not act upon this information without first engaging professional legal counsel.
Got it. So you were at a variety of roles, kind of climbing up the ladder at Sampson from 2012 to 21. Ending as deputy GC, and then you went over to Sage Natural Resources, for a couple of years up until September 2022, and you were VP land and GC. And then you landed at, you were recruited to Farmers National September 22nd to current, and now you lead the energy group. So just real quick, Samson, Sage, what basins, just what was the kind of profile of the company, just to give everyone who's listening reference on kind of your direct, you know, basin exposure, transaction exposure.
Yeah, and I'm sure many of your listeners have touched Samson at some point in its history. It was, you know, been around since the early 70s and just grew into a behemoth. When I joined, there was well over 1,000 employees. We were one of the largest independents. I joined in 2012, so it had just been acquired by KKR in a $7.2 billion deal. Now, it turns out they may have overpaid a bit. And so we did end up filing for bankruptcy. We were one of those first large bankruptcies in 2015. But from a, you know, I got the big company experience, which was very helpful. So I was in the legal department. You started doing the grunt work of software agreements and insurance, and then you worked your way up to rig contracts and production marketing and even derivative contracts. So I got to see the whole, every facet of the industry, but also I got to be trained by people who knew it. And, you know, I had a mentor there named Scott Weatherholt. He's now the GC at Weatherford. You know, I had people who really took time to mentor and teach, because oil and gas is not intuitive, and oil and gas law certainly is not intuitive. We were in about 14 states. As the company's future turned, my role really turned into, you know, I would help the operations side, but I was very divestment focused. So during my time there, we sold a lot of assets, and I was generally the lead in-house lawyer on those sales. My most interesting experience there was during the bankruptcy. For us to get out, we essentially had to sell 6 assets to 6 different buyers, and I think we had about 90 days.
Oh, wow.
And so that was an amazing experience. We worked with some great lawyers who were at Kirkland at the time, Rahul Vashi and Cody Carper. Great M&A lawyers. But I remember holding an infant child on my patio, just swapping phone calls between those two guys and different buyers. Sometimes we'd be on a call and you'd forget what asset we were talking about. But we sold, it was East, Central, and West Anadarko, San Juan, Williston, Permian assets. And, you know, just so my basin experience is very diverse. Once we emerged from bankruptcy, all we had left was the East Texas assets and our Wyoming assets, which was Greater Green River and Powder River Basin. We ended up selling those East Texas assets to Rockcliff, who, as you know, just recently did a pretty sizable sale of those assets, Tokyo Gas. And that was a really fun deal to work. We sold that for over $500 million. In the gas market, we really timed that well. But it was one of those deals you could just tell was a complete win-win for both parties, because the Rockcliff guys had a plan. You could tell they were going to get to work immediately. They were just waiting for closing and rigs were going to hit the ground. So it's been great to watch those guys develop that asset and then succeed. And then we were left with Wyoming. And so I had to learn a lot about Wyoming and spend a lot of time up there, learn the permitting rules, learn a lot about, you know, managing assets on federal lands. We ended up selling the Greater Green River first, and then ended up selling the Powder River Basin to Continental after we drilled quite a few wells. So we wanted, as you know, Powder River's kind of that stacked pay. And so we were trying to prove up various formations up there, and with some success. So we ended up doing a full exit. That was our last asset. So good example of a team having kind of a clear directive and executing it in a timely fashion. Sage was in the Barnett. So after we sold the Powder River Basin, moved over to Sage. They're here in Tulsa. Barnett operator, had about 500 wells. I didn't have experience in the Barnett, so it was a lot of fun learning that. Obviously, it's a very difficult environment for the actual operations themselves. So you can find a hole in the donut and say you're going to drill some wells there. But, you know, how are you going to get water? How are you going to dispose of water? So how are you going to work with these partners that have been pretty entrenched? How are you going to work with your gas gathering agreement that, you know, Chesapeake may have negotiated 15 years ago and it's not going to work anymore? So those kind of challenges. And we at Sage, we just drilled a ton of wells. So it was a lot of fun. We kept a rig going. We had to get creative to do that. We worked with a lot of partners to make that happen, but it was a great team. And then I was there about 18 months and this opportunity came my way to run the mineral management business here at Farmers.
Very interesting. Thanks for walking through that. It makes sense why you're in the seat you are today with kind of diverse background and the assets you've worked and the variety of, you know, situations you've been in, you know, in terms of unwinding portfolio after bankruptcy, et cetera. So it looks like you're in the right place, right? So let's transition. Farmers National Company, been around for over 90 years, since 1929. One of the largest independent, you know, employee-owned oil and gas minerals management firms, really specialty asset management firms. You guys do more than just minerals. Give me some high-level bullet points. I'd love to dig into the weeds. There's a lot of ways we can take this conversation, and I have a lot of different questions to ask. But just let's start kind of the high level. You know, if you were a minerals company, you know, what basins are you in? How many NRAs do you have? What's your monthly cash flow? What are your main operators? These are the questions I would ask for you guys. It's, you know, number of clients and, you know, assets under management, yada, yada, yada. So over to you to just kind of break down and give some context. And then I have a bunch of things I'd like to dig into the weeds on.
Yeah, I think before we dig into the mineral side, which I think will be a good discussion, you know, Farmers itself is a very unique American company. Yeah, like you said, been around almost 100 years. We're very diverse. So really, if it touches property, we should be able to do it. And so we're one of the largest farm and ranch management, and that means what it means. We're managing ranches and farms, and that can, you know, accordion how much work that takes. Sometimes it's just managing a tenant lease. Sometimes it's operating the farm and selling the grain, and we'll do all that. You know, in the mineral space, we're very tailored to fiduciaries and banks and trust companies. So, you know, the language they use is really, it's called hard to value or unique assets. That's what we're trying to manage for others. But we've got farm and ranch. We have real estate, which is massive. We've done over $3 billion in deals over the past 5 years. We're selling farms throughout the country. And that's a unique market and a unique buyer set. And there's unique considerations for each region. So we've got real estate agents, you know, peppered throughout the country doing that. We've got an insurance business. We've got a hunting lease network. So, you know, a lot of these properties are prime hunting ground. So we have a hunting lease network. If you Google it, you'll find the website. And they have like an eBay style bidding platform where you can get registered and get access to some hunting grounds. So we've got a forestry management. So same deal. A lot of these properties will have valuable timber. And so we have an office in Jacksonville, Texas, that manages forest land throughout the country. And that's one where, you know, having professional management, I've learned, you know, I didn't know a lot about timber until I joined, but that's one where having management is a huge differentiator. If you think you can just manage a forest by yourself, let me tell you, you got another thing coming. These guys can double the profit of a property just through correct management of the trees and of the pests and all that.
I'd love to just dig into that and understand a little bit more, because I'm kind of hanging around the rim on that one. I don't know too much about timber, but there's a bunch of families that own minerals that have timber in their portfolio or sold their timber businesses and retained the mineral rights. There's also the carbon credits angle of timber, which is interesting and kind of evolving as we speak. So what does it mean? So if I own, I literally own the surface of like an area that's heavily wooded with trees, and then is it just supplying lumber to manufacturing companies and construction companies? I mean, what, when you manage that, walk me through, I'm just curious, what are all the moving parts?
Yeah, it's really not dissimilar to farming, other than you're not going to do a complete harvest. So there is an art form to harvesting a forest to get the most wood quickly. And so if you don't manage a forest, you may have a dramatically lower output over a 25-year period than if you have professionals who know what they're doing. Yeah, and mainly it's what it sounds like. It's a very unique business because it's kind of one and done, right, for a while. So you chop down the trees, you sell the lumber to a mill, and then you start again. And generally, you're going to do that in an organized fashion. And I'll tell you that the timber guys are my favorite guys to talk to in the company, because, I mean, they can talk to you for 3 hours about an insect. So, and it's enthralling, right? They just want to hang out in the woods. So if you, yeah, if you have a sizable timber asset, I would highly recommend reaching out to us or somebody like us. There's others in the market, because that's one where it really does make a big difference. Beyond forestry, we also have FNC Ag Stock. So that's a FINRA licensed. They're licensed with the SEC and broker dealer. And they sell a lot of, well, ag stock. So stock and ag companies. Very interesting business that's continuing to grow. We even have, just to show you how diverse we are, we even have a lake management person. So if you had a lake, we have a guy who will help you manage that. So we try to touch everything for property.
And why do I need to manage a lake? Like what is the business model around that? I'm intrigued.
I think it has to be a pretty darn sizable lake, and you are managing tenants and or businesses around it, and you're managing the wildlife within it.
Interesting. Okay.
But you know, we're getting out of my depth, no pun intended.
Yeah, yeah.
With the lake management, but we have someone dedicated to doing that. So, you know, the mineral management business, you know, we've been doing it for over two decades now. We got into the business through a banking relationship that had this need. And so we just continued to develop it. Our business is really tailored to that fiduciary standard. And, you know, that's us aiming high. So what you find is if you are tailoring your service and your deliverables to a fiduciary, well, you can generally handle all the other clients that are not fiduciaries, but have those same issues. So that's what we tailor our service to. Our primary clients are banks, trust companies, wealth managers, but then we also have railroads, hospitals, universities, churches, you know, really run the gamut all the way to family offices and families and then individuals. So that's kind of the scope. We have at any time somewhere between 450, 500 agency relationships, but that adds up to somewhere between 1,500 to 2,000 actual accounts. And we can talk about what that means, agency, and how that all works.
Hey guys, I wanted to take a quick break from the conversation to say thank you to all of our podcast sponsors.
Looking to ramp up deal flow for your minerals and non-op ground game? Since 2019, the Texas Mineral Company has closed on over 120 deals, totaling $110 million in value, with deal sizes ranging from $50,000 upwards of $5 million. Whether you're looking for white space, permit, duck, PDP, AFE, or wellbore-only deals, the Texas Mineral Company has got you covered. For more information on how to source deal flow from the Texas Mineral Company, please email Toby Martinez at toby@thetexasmineralcompany.com.
Over the past 20 years, Riverbend Energy Group has been the definitive leader in the non-op and mineral space, where they are actively acquiring minerals in the Delaware Basin, Midland Basin, the Williston, and the Eagleford. Following their $1.8 billion sale of their non-op platform in 2022, they are also back actively acquiring non-op interests in the Delaware Basin, Midland Basin, and Williston. If you have minerals or non-op working interests in these areas that you would like to sell, then please visit www.riverbendenergygroup.com for more information. Farmers National Company has oil and gas experts located across the country ready to provide you unmatched convenience and service for your land management needs. Whether you're looking for turnkey management of oil and gas interests or simply looking for an advisor to help you sell or lease your minerals, Farmers National Company has you covered. Learn more about Farmers National Company's team of certified mineral managers, landmen, attorneys, and accountants by going to fncenergy.com or reach out directly at energy@farmersnational.com. Does your team ever struggle with employee turnover? What about right-sizing your team to fit your company's needs over time? Do you have the right accounting systems and software in place to maintain control and visibility on all your cost centers? If any of these things are challenges in your business, then Opportune's back office outsourcing could be the right solution. For more information, please visit www.opportune.com.
Where my mind goes, talking about all the different things you're doing, you know, is it common that you have clients, and I imagine, you know, this is the case in a lot of scenarios, if it's a trust or a bank or something, or a hospital, you know, some sort of foundation where there's a bunch of stuff that's gifted over the years, and it's kind of a smorgasbord of different, you know, assets. I call it like a bundle of sticks. They have lake management needs, and then some timber, and then some minerals, and then they, you know, they're in the right place for solar. So they need, you know, help managing solar on surface negotiations and midstream. And I don't know, it's just all these different things, which because there are areas, I know Louisiana, I've talked to some folks in the past that have, you know, looked at a business, building a fund that can acquire, you know, surface water management, minerals and timber. And a lot of times with a trust or someone you, where you would buy these things, it can't be severed, or the seller is unwilling to sever it. And a lot of specialty minerals funds cannot buy these types of assets altogether. And so there's an interesting, you know, opportunity there. But over to you to kind of answer that. Like, how many of your clients fit that category? And do you think, I'll just say it for you. Obviously, you guys are a value add because you can service all those different things, right?
Right. Yes. No, we have a number of clients where we manage their minerals, we manage all their farms, and they may have multiple farms. We manage their timber and their hunting leases. So we've got some that check all those boxes. You know, your comment about the surface, obviously with my background, I came in knowing how valuable surface is, how lucrative the water space in particular has gotten. So one of the first things I did, we have an office, you know, our energy office is headquartered in Tulsa, but we have a Fort Worth, Texas office that services a good number of our Texas banks and Texas clientele. But then I opened an office in Midland, Texas last year. So we have two full-time surface landmen. And so what are those guys doing? Those guys are negotiating water deals. They're negotiating pipeline easements. They're negotiating transmission line easements. And not just in Texas. They're doing it in Kansas, Illinois, wherever it's needed by our clients. So, you know, what's unique about us is, you know, the mineral management space is tough, especially from a boutique. You know, if you're at a boutique size, it can be a difficult business to sustain. You really need a good, loyal foundation of clients. You know, we were able to reach kind of terminal velocity quite some time ago. And so now we're able to offer these services. And my goal is always that a client feels like they have a team of seven people servicing their asset. And to some extent, that's true. Well, we have a GIS specialist in-house. We have a title research specialist. We've got these surface landmen. And so as those issues pop up, we just take care of them. There's not always, you know, we're laser focused on maintaining these relationships for decades. And most of our relationships do go on for decades. And so we are very active in the surface space now. And I've been surprised at how quickly that's taken off across the country. On the renewable side, we're inundated. You know, we manage over 2 million acres of farmland in tier one renewable acreage. And so we are currently being inundated with those kind of opportunities. And so that, again, that is a value add, but we also, you know, and you're probably going to get to this, but our client base does have a different mindset. You know, a farm owner who's had that farm in their family for three generations, you know, that they get that letter in the mail saying, hey, we want to blanket it with solar panels and pay you X. That is not just a simple economic transaction. That's a lot of, you know, our farm managers work really closely with those owners. So they know each other really well. So we know how to manage that. And at times it's not a good fit for the client's goals, but we're there to kind of go side by side with them. Same with these pipeline easements and transmission lines. You know, these are complex projects and it's, but the landowners are at a significant disadvantage. And so it feels really good when we're able to say, hey, you know, that landman from that renewable company wants to get an easement, have them call our surface guy in Midland. And all of a sudden that conversation changes, because if you're talking to a surface landman in Midland, like, you know what you're getting into, right?
So. Yeah, for sure. No, I can see the value there. What if you were to, if someone's listening here, what are the boxes that get ticked where it's a no-brainer to use a service like yours? Is that after a certain scale? Is it you have surface and minerals, timber and minerals? We kind of touched on that. Is it, I have a very scattered, the more scattered the portfolio, the tinier the interest. I know tiny interests that are all over the place is a headache to manage. And so if you have the infrastructure and kind of the embedded cost to, you know, to do that, it makes way more sense. There's a lot of folks who don't buy minerals under a certain NRA size purely because it's cost prohibitive to manage them, right? So economies of scale and leveraging a service like yours or something like that is something that comes to mind. I mean, what is the ideal client or where does it start to make sense? Like, I've done episodes with Aegis and other with other folks in the hedging space. And I've said, you know, what production size does it start to make sense? What well count does it start to make sense to look at hedging? The analogy of that for minerals management and asset management, when does it start to make sense to consider it instead of just doing it on an Excel and doing it in-house?
No, it's a good question. I would say, you know, most assets, there's cash flow, but you know, there always can be upside. So we're cognizant of that. We're greedy for acreage. We got an ape and we put prospects out there. We want acreage. We want leasing opportunities. So I would say if you're making, you know, 200K a year, you're at least at the threshold where you could have a discussion with somebody and let's see this asset. Let's see what we see for the future of it. Again, we have scale that smaller operators won't. So we're able to take some of those bets. And we want those relationships because I find if we service a client really well, they're gonna talk to their friends. They're gonna tell other people. So, and certainly in the fiduciary space, there is no minimum. I will take any bank, any trust company. With that, those our services tailored to that, and we take the good with the bad. Because even some of our largest bank clients, you know, they could have 200 trusts that we manage for them. Well, a good bit of those trusts may be uneconomic for farmers to manage, and that's part of the value proposition is we don't care. You know, we want the relationship. We want market share. Banks buy other banks. Banks get consolidated. And it's what's different about it coming from the oil and gas side. We're so regional in our mindset. Once you get into the financial fiduciary space, those regions are meaningless. You know, so a trust officer in Delaware could be managing, you know, $100 million asset in the Permian. So it's not even relevant anymore. So really, we take all kinds on the fiduciary side. And then from an individual perspective, I would say the number one thing is your goals need to be aligned with management. Meaning, if you're somebody who wants to manipulate the data, create reports, then a turnkey management service is not for you. I mean, that's just, you know, obviously you want to be more engaged. We have plenty of clients where they tell us the custom reports they want every month. And we love that. So we'll work with our development team. We'll create custom reports and get them to you. But generally, the reason you hire us is for us to do all that. We're the ones synthesizing the data. We're looking for opportunities. We're making sure you're in pay, making sure you're not, you know, there's not a trespass situation. Make sure you're covered from any regulatory filings. That's what we do. And so there's, you know, some of the best interactions I've had in my year and a half here is we'll talk to a matriarch or a patriarch of a family who's got a large portfolio. And they say, listen, I've been doing this for 40 years for my brothers and sisters. Nobody's ever thanked me. I'm tired of doing it. And I want to just get it off my shoulders. And usually my response is, well, you're lying. You're not ready. You're the person who's been doing all the work for a reason. That's who you are. But usually that conversation is kind of a 12-month process to get them mentally and emotionally prepared to actually drop this burden. And once they do, it's so fun because they get their monthly statement. We do a kind of a 401k snapshot, gives them a bunch of details about their asset. You know, we'll have scheduled calls, and you can just see like the burden's off of them, and they're thinking about their grandkids instead of, you know, why am I not in pay in these new oxy wells or something. So that's been a lot of fun.
Have you ever found yourself wandering the halls of NAEP, feeling lost in the sea of boots and attendees, and thinking to yourself, where the hell are all the minerals and non-op executives? Well, my friends, worry no more. On February 8th, NAEP will be launching their inaugural Minerals and Non-Op Hub, which will serve as a dedicated and central location for minerals and non-op executives to network and show deals. For more information, please Google NAEP Minerals and Non-Op Hub or email exhibit@naepexpo.com.
It's a perfect transition to a question I want to bring up, and that's the generational wealth transfer. How have you seen that impact your clients and then just overall the portfolio? Is there a different dynamic at play now with, I forget where we're at, Gen Z or Gen X or whatever letter it is. obviously, they're growing up in a different era, the different social values, not the same emotional tie to these assets as, the great grandfather, grandparents have had.
Right.
Look, from your perspective, you have your hands in a lot of pots and a lot of different types of individuals across the country. Generational wealth transfer, over to you.
Yeah, a good example is on the farm side. So there's a lot of metrics out there, but if you look at the average age of the farm owner, it's something around 62 and a half years old. And what we see in these mineral assets is a very similar demographic. And so we have a lot of conversations with those matriarchs or patriarchs who are trying to figure out, my next generation, they don't know anything about oil and gas. They're not living on the ranch. How can I make this work? What's the best answer for them? And so we have those conversations a lot. And a lot of people don't know that solutions like ours are out there. That's the first thing. We want to communicate that, because at the end of the day, the number one question I get is it a good time to sell minerals? And my answer, except maybe in 2022, is generally no. Like, let's hold these things, and let's come up with a good plan to hold these for a long time, because there's generally upside to be found. That where we're going to find oil is generally where we already found oil. So you want to hold those assets if you can. That being said, sometimes we have generational transfers where they say we want to turn this all into cash. So that's where we help them sell those minerals. So we do that quite a bit. We did 56 deals this past year. And that's, we've got accounts opening and closing every day. And that's just part of the trust business. So new trusts are formed, trusts may terminate, and there's a disbursement of assets and we need to sell, or those trusts may disperse into subsequent trusts and we're creating a new fractionalized management account for beneficiaries. So yeah, I think the generational wealth transfer is a tremendous opportunity for our business. And that's one of the reasons I joined, because that's an obvious problem. We've got valuable assets and we don't have enough people who understand them or who give intrinsic value to them. So that we're there to step into the gap. And a lot of times when I do a presentation, I always start talking about how fantastic it is that mineral management is even a concept, because, in most countries in the world, like 99%, free people are not allowed to own the minerals. And so mineral management is such a gift that we even have this. We can own the minerals. We can pass them down. Such a fantastic experiment that's been wildly successful. And so I always start with that. And you can see, you'll have those second or third generation folks, and you can tell, well, I've never thought of that. No one's ever presented that story to me. And so you do that, and then all of a sudden you can start seeing, well, I'm proud that my family owned this. A lot of the older generation we deal with, they have that pride instilled. I can't tell you how many times I hear my grandfather, he had so much foresight. He was so smart. He was brilliant. And he bought these minerals for 6 cents. I hear that story all the time. So kind of telling that story to those subsequent generations makes a huge difference, because it's not a story they're hearing.
Little side story. Years ago, I was hosting a reception in Midland, let's call it 2016 maybe. And there was a blockbuster deal, a couple $1 billion, someone sold and was acquired, right? And so this reception, if you can imagine, we're in Midland Country Club, it was 100 guys, like CEO level. And there was a couple of old timers there, probably late 70s. Hey, John, remember when we bought that acreage over there for $15 an acre? What did these bums over here pay? $40,000 an acre. Wow. And they were doing it just loud enough. They were just patronizing everyone.
Right.
Just sitting there. I'm like, unbelievable.
Yeah. Brutal.
Yeah. Brutal. But yeah. I digress. Something just caught my ear. I was not expecting that in this conversation. 56 deals were sold last year from your portfolio. Anyone listening here, I think the space is made of deal junkies, right?
Right.
I think that's why you gravitate towards minerals, because you can just do deals all the time for folks who love doing that. You guys are a mineral manager. I wouldn't have thought of you as someone who's selling assets. You're selling assets from trusts and banks. These are not a very liquid part of the space. I've heard numbers 10, 11% of the minerals in the U.S. are held in trusts and different types of, you know, minerals management accounts and banks. So for the most part, when I talk to folks, I think that's just a part of the market that's not accessible. So now you're doing 56 deals last year out of that bucket. Super fascinated to have you unfold that a little bit. Are the buyers the minerals funds that have been on this podcast and listen to this podcast? Is it other trusts? I mean, are you guys doing auctions? Are you doing negotiated sales? Like, what does this look like? I'm really curious to learn more.
Yeah. And before I get into that, you know, if you think of mineral management, there are some core tasks that you have to be able to do. And I would say you have to be able to sell and you have to be able to lease. On top of that, you have to do all the management items. But so we have a full leasing team. We did about 400 leases last year, $23.5 million in bonus.
By the way, that's a great distinction, because when you think of minerals management, you just think, well, hey, why am I going to pay money to someone to just cash my checks? I think that's the misconception that's out there, or why people might gravitate to some sort of, you know, homemade software or, you know, one of the turnkey softwares out there. I'm not saying those aren't a fit for certain companies, right, who are a little more proactive, but you're saying that's a very small part of it and the value of proposition. So continue.
Yeah. You know, these other facets are a big part of it. I would say even the, you know, we say the cashing of the check, but, you know, that every month we have 2.2 million lines of data. We cashed over 75,000 checks. And to be able to have someone synthesize the data and provide it to you in a consumable format every month, and then to have a human that you can actually call and talk to about questions, I do think there's value. There's tremendous value, especially with when we talk about this demographic change. At some point, you know, oil and gas is going to look like Sanskrit to some folks. And so I don't belittle that aspect of it, like processing the revenue, making sure division orders are processed, making sure your fractional ownership is correct. You know, I'm still shocked at how many division orders we send back and say, listen, this isn't correct. And so that kind of activity is, that's our core, what we're doing day to day. So I do think there's significant value proposition. It probably gets a bad rap because people are saying, well, you're just clipping a coupon off the checks. But, you know, it's our goal to provide the clients deliverables, whether it's a bank, we want to give them, when that trust client comes in for a meeting, we want them to have those deliverables ready to go so that they look fantastic. Or if it's a family, we want to give them those custom reports. We want to have those quarterly or annual meetings so that they know that they don't have to know everything and they can rely on our competence. So I think that's of high value. But, you know, the other side of that is, well, leasing, you know, Farmers has a lease form. People know, a land broker knows what they're getting into when they negotiate with us. They know, we know the market terms. This past year, we actually, I don't know if you'd heard of it, but the Lyerly report, or the U.S. lease price report, it's been around since 1981. It's very popular in the fiduciary space, but essentially aggregates leasing data throughout the lower 48. We actually acquired that business this past year. It provides 6 publications every year of leasing data. We have contributors, and then we scrape public data on leasing sales and those kind of things. But, you know, we did a 400 leases, so we have a lot of insight into market, and, you know, it's not subject to any small area of geographical boundaries. You know, we're across the whole space. So now, you know, we're SOC 1 compliant. We have controls that maybe others wouldn't anticipate. So, for instance, whoever's negotiating our lease, that person internally cannot be the one who ultimately approves the terms. So we have a lot of internal controls that are a little unique to make sure that we are meeting the expectations of our banking clients and fiduciaries. The sales side, you know, that number, like 56 sales in a year, that's probably pretty consistent. What's not consistent is the value. So we may have someone who wants to bring a $90 million asset to market next year or not. What we do have every year is a lot of small interests that need to get divested. So you will see us on online auctions. You'll see our name out there. So we do use those where it makes sense. We also have our own buyer list. We have a full-time mineral sales advisor. So all he does is sales and valuations full-time. And so sometimes the right answer is putting it on an auction, getting those eyeballs. Sometimes the right answer is selling to an operator. And sometimes the right answer is a unique buyer set in a geographical region, like, you know, more of a negotiated sale.
Hey guys, I wanted to take a quick break from the conversation to say thank you to all of our podcast sponsors. Your property is your legacy, so you should only leave it in the hands of a land management company who has a legacy of its own. If you own oil and gas interests or act as a fiduciary for those who do, you can find a long-term partner at Farmers National Company, who, since 1929, has taken great pride in helping clients maximize the benefits of property ownership by providing turnkey management services and by working alongside them through generational transfers of specialized assets such as oil and gas interests and farmland. To learn more, visit fncenergy.com or reach out directly at energy@farmersnational.com.
Since 2019, the Texas Mineral Company has been a leading ground game broker for minerals and non-op deals, closing over 120 transactions across the Permian, SCOOP/STACK, Haynesville, Bakken, Powder River Basin, DJ, and Eagleford, with deal sizes ranging from $50,000 upwards of $5 million, and 1.5 NRAs upwards of 3,500 NRAs, the Texas Mineral Company can be flexible on where and how they can source your deal flow. For more information on how your team can work with the Texas Mineral Company, please email Toby Martinez at toby@thetexasmineralcompany.com.
Scaling up your portfolio while minimizing G&A is the name of the game in the minerals and non-op space. Whether you're a brand new fund, an established team who's growing quickly, or a fully developed portfolio in harvest mode, Opportune's back office outsourcing team can help. Stop worrying about all the headaches that come along with day-to-day accounting and back office operations and contact Opportune today. For more information, please visit www.opportune.com. Over the past 20 years, Riverbend Energy Group has been the definitive leader in the non-op and mineral space, where they are actively acquiring minerals in the Delaware Basin, Midland Basin, the Williston, and the Eagleford. Following their $1.8 billion sale of their non-op platform in 2022, they are also back actively acquiring non-op interests in the Delaware Basin, Midland Basin, and Williston. If you have minerals or non-op working interests in these areas that you would like to sell, then please visit www.riverbendenergygroup.com for more information.
Hi there, it's Rachel Reese at R. Reese & Associates, your outhouse counsel. You may ask, what's an outhouse counsel? Well, it's a law firm that is focused on the day-to-day legal tasks that normally would be completed by your legal department. Our attorneys in Houston and DFW have spent their careers in both in-house positions and at large law firms and can provide your company with the efficient and responsive service you would expect from your own legal department for things like contracts, transactions, and title opinions at a fraction of the cost of what you're used to paying. So whether your company has no legal department or your legal department is a mighty team of one, we can help. Give us a call at 832-831-2289 or learn more at rreeselaw.com.
Anyone listening, I encourage you to reach out. I guess the best way is to reach out to you to be on that grocery list of
yes.
Buyer.
Yeah, right? Get on that buyer list.
Okay, excellent. And then y'all will be at NAPE, I'm assuming, as well. So stop by the booth. You can meet Chase and get to know each other, tell your preferences, and just start building a relationship from there.
Yep, we'll be there.
Awesome. Are these typically liquidations of entire trusts or entities? Or is this, hey guys, we're managing these, and right now we feel like as a fiduciary, this is the best time to consider selling?
Yes, it is generally full liquidation. I anticipate that changing over the next 5 years or so, because I do see, as we get more education in the market about, you know, the availability of our service. To me, you know, when we talk about a client's goals, if the goal is, well, I feel like I'm too exposed here to the oil and gas commodities, to me, the solution is not liquidate the whole thing. You know, let's sell a piece of this. Let's get more creative. So I think traditionally it hasn't been a creative space. It's really, you know, we're turning this all to cash. And that's really almost 100% of our deals. I do think that's changing, though, as there's some innovation in the market. And I know there's a market out there for folks who are happy to just take a piece of a sizable asset. But yeah, generally, it's full liquidation.
Okay. Talk to me about, well, one thing I actually want to mention. So Everyone who's listening to this who sells assets can appreciate that you always have to be ready to sell if you want to be timely. And so if you're out there with a portfolio and there's an event in your family's life or, you know, something macro that triggers the need for liquidation, getting all your ducks in a row and having it clean enough to do a transaction is where minerals management is going to be a huge value add, right? Because
yes,
there's either a window of opportunities where you can strike. And if it takes 120 days to get your house in order, you might miss that window of opportunity. And then second, if there's a bit of urgency for whatever reason, where you need to liquidate and put cash into something else for another opportunity, again, being ready, you know, there's opportunity costs there for the institution, family, foundation, whatever it may be. So that I just wanted to say that as an anecdote. Another thing.
Well, can I jump in on that one? Because
sure.
I've certainly been in companies where we missed that opportunity, right? You hit the green light, and then by the time you're going to market, the market's changed. No, you're right on that. What makes the mineral management business difficult is that there's no real correlation between the value of an asset or in an account and the amount of work required. So I'll repeat that. There's no correlation between value and the work required. So we will be selling, like you said, scattered working interests with incomplete information. And this may be something that we're going to sell for $25K. This is a 6-month odyssey, right? To get that cleaned up, to get make sure everything's in pay. And so I see it every day. Our mineral managers will be going through to great pains to get an asset ready to sell. I've always said that, you know, if you really want to learn about your asset, try to sell it, right? That's when you find all the warts. You rarely find, you know, the Easter eggs you didn't know about, right? It's usually the warts. So we spent a ton of time preparing for sales. And yeah, and that is not something that, unless you're entrenched in the space, you know, I even encourage folks, you know, do a little digging. But if you've got a lot in front of you, get somebody engaged right away. Because, you know, our title research specialist will be able to do more in a couple hours than you may be grinding your wheels for weeks. So just get with an expert early on that, because we know how to use public resources. We know what to look for and who to call and what not to chase, right? There may be times where we say, whoa, you know, let's not send a broker out to this county to run title back to abstract, because that's not going to make any sense. Yeah.
How much, you know, in terms of efficiencies and, you know, just getting the job done is process and just know-how, you know, for instance, getting in pay status, you know who to call at that operator, you know, if it's tax stuff, you know, to call Susie in this county, or you know that, well, whatever, those little kind of intangible things you just accrue over time, and there's a relationship and someone gets back to you because they know you on a first name basis. And then how much of it is technology and scale and just, hey, listen, you could know exactly what we know, but you just can't do what we do with a two-person shop. But I guarantee it's both, but just kind of walked out of, through that as a food for thought.
Yeah, I think it is a good split. You know, division orders is a great example. We have a full land administration team. And to me, I view it somewhat as a dying discipline. And we have people who've been doing it for 30 years plus. And there is an art form, you know, because when you're trying to get information about your 0.000065 interest in a well from ConocoPhillips, you know, that's not a high value conversation for ConocoPhillips to have. And so how are you going to coerce them into spending even 12 minutes looking at your question, sending you a plat or sending you a piece of a title opinion? The truth is there's an art form to it and there's a language to it. And our people know who to reach out to at those companies. They know how to speak to them. They know at what frequency. There's an art form to this human interaction of getting these large companies who are nowadays fairly understaffed, frankly, to spend the time to answer your question that is just adds no value to their day. So we do that. You know, the know-how is important. So when we bring in, you know, one of the things I like about our business is obviously the energy business has contracted. So there's a lot of good people that have been kind of forced out. And so this, our business and others like us are a good place for those people to find a home and bring their expertise. But you get in here and it's a whole different ballgame, the way we do things, We want to have that know-how, but then we supplement it with the technology and the reporting. So obviously the technology, if you're going to cash 80,000 checks in a year, you need a good bit of technology to do that accurately. But if you do that accurately, the amount of data we have at our disposal, we can do amazing things. And so we have a development team in-house. So we create, most of our stuff is internal proprietary. We don't use a lot of off-the-shelf technologies. And those are supplementary to the human management. And so, you know, my mineral managers know every month they're going to run these four or five reports for every account. And some of those things would be finding discrepancies in revenue. It could be finding shut-in or TNA'd wells that got hit with expenses. You know, there's a number of other reports. I'm not going to go through them all because that is some of our secret sauce, is we're able to leverage that technology to get that scale, but people still have that feeling of that I've got a human sitting in a chair, looking at a map, you know, talking to operators, acting as steward for these assets. So it's a good mix. And what gets me excited is when you bring those upstream folks into this space and you have an R&D team. I mean, sky's the limit. There's so much, you know, I'm used to the decisions we had were 10, 20, 50, $100 million development decisions. And you're going to pour a lot into the technology and understanding the reservoir and all the land and GIS and all that. So coming to this space and trying to bring some of that here, you don't need it all, but it's very exciting because then all of a sudden your mineral managers are really humming along with technology as a great supplement. I don't think technology can replace, you know, at the end of the day, based upon my experience. I mean, you should see our mail every Monday. It's, you know, it's goes to the ceiling, right?
Challenge is standardizing the data, right? I know AI and different Excel macros and all that stuff can be band-aids to help get you part of the way there. But the fact of the matter is, I mean, you're dealing with hundreds, if not 1,000 operators, and you know, the revenue statements are all in different formats, and you can't just run some sort of code and then it just spits it out, because then it's inaccurate and then the value proposition you're delivering false, because right. Now you're missing detail. People will be out of pay, incorrect revenue interest, et cetera. So I agree with you. I think technology enhances, you know, what we're doing. It doesn't replace, for sure.
Yeah. Right. And on that point, you know, we do have proprietary software where we are reading checks. But it is even that involves a human element, because you're really training the AI to read, you know, an oxy check. And all it takes is oxy changing, you know, something on their check one month, you know, no format, and you're back to the grindstone, right? Training the AI. So it is, again, it's supplementary. It doesn't replace. And even if you're deploying that technology, you still got to have a human quality control, you know, backstop.
Excellent. Well, Chase, thanks for coming on. I learned a lot. Really interesting conversation. I think if you're out there and you manage your own minerals, but you're a Texas family and you have ranches and you have all sorts of other stuff that could be interesting for Chase's team to help with, encourage you to reach out to them. If you're interested in getting help with your minerals portfolio, obviously reach out. And then for all the deal junkies out there, get in touch with Chase and just add it to the pipeline. I think it'll be interesting to get in your distribution, see what kind of stuff you guys have coming to market. And like you said, it's going to be random in terms of size and,
right.
You know, but there's always, you know, there's always a buyer at the right price and for the right situation. That's what's so beautiful about this space. It could be some families who love buying, you know, in the middle of nowhere because they're, you know, planning for the great, great grandchildren's, you know, future world income. Right. So anyways, thanks again for coming on. Looking forward to seeing it, Nape, and we'll talk soon.
Thanks, Tim. Enjoyed it.
Hey, guys. Thanks for listening to this episode of the podcast. I hope you enjoyed. The Minerals and Royalties podcast is meant for informational purposes only. Tim Powell and the Minerals and Royalties Authority are not promoting any specific securities or investments, nor are they providing any type of investment advice. If you enjoyed the episode, then I encourage you to tune in more and also check out the Minerals and Royalties Authority YouTube channel. Thanks, and see you next time.